Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Daniel McAdams with me, co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. Big news. The cabinet is being rearranged already. You know, it's a little bit early for this, but I guess it's not surprising. The whole system is in turmoil, whether it's economic or foreign policy. There's no concrete answers, not enough money for everybody to go along, and a lot of arguing, a lot of politicans, and a lot of anger. Those Democrats are still upset about the election. Can you imagine such a thing? Republicans would never be upset about anything like that. But Michael Flynn resigned. He may have been fired pseudo-like, but he's out. And I guess it's not a total shock. We weren't the greatest supporter of Michael Flynn when he was appointed because he was controversial. But this really raises a lot of questions. Why is he out? Can we cheer and say, well, you know, this is very good. We weren't supporters, and now he's out. That's going to be the answer, and that's going to be better. But he has an important position, had it, National Security Advisor, and they have to replace him. We can talk a little bit about who might be replaced. Now, will they be any better, or that individual be any better than what we have? So there's a lot of questions. Some people probably won, and there's some people that lost on this deal. But the administration, I would say, doesn't look too great, you know, that they have to shake up the cabinet in less than a month. So I think this is going to be around for a while. I think it's a lot of politics, maybe more about politics than anything else. But the foreign policy is very much involved here, too. Whose side won on the foreign policy? Of course, we don't have anybody in the fight. We don't have a non-interventionist up there defending our position and saying, you know, the answer to some of this mess is just getting out of the way of this and stay out of these conflicts. So, but we'll sort this out the best we can. What were your thoughts? I guess you weren't surprised at all that Flynn had to go, you know. It was just a matter of time.
Yeah, the pressure began building, I think. And, you know, the thing is, Flynn is a lightning rod, and we've been critical of him because he's obsessed with Iran. Yeah. But when it came to Russia, which arguably is more important because more of a threat of a war, a dangerous war, but he's going to be a lightning rod because he's sort of the face of Trump's Russia policy. Trump says, why can't we get along with Russia? Michael Flynn is known to be sympathetic to that view that we should improve relations with Russia. And so therefore, he's an easy target, and he's targeted by the neocons and the Democrats both because of that. And the whole issue, of course, as the viewers know, is about the idea of him having a conversation with the Russian ambassador in Washington, Sergei Kislyak, after the sanctions were announced by President Obama. And apparently, according to information leaked by the intelligence community, which is itself against the law to do, this was bugged. His conversation with Kislyak was bugged, and the discussion of how Russia would respond to the sanctions apparently came up in the conversation, and it was conveyed that it would be, you know, better to not go too crazy because things might ease up in the next administration.
Well, my reaction was a little bit cynical when I heard of it. Hey, maybe this is good. We'll keep these two groups, the Pentagon and the CIA, at each other, spend more time spying on each other. Maybe they'll leave us alone, you know. But that of course, is awfully bizarre, and it's very important. But I think you touched on what I think is really the motivation on that. It isn't the Logan Act and people discussing it. It isn't, mainstream media doing something. I think it has to do with Russia. That's the part of the foreign policy that we liked. Maybe that was the problem. We liked it, so they had to get rid of it. But, you know, we liked it because there was an opening and trying to remove some of those political sanctions that were put on just in the middle of that campaign, those new sanctions against Russia. And it's not like people that are lining up in transition teams ready to be in administration don't talk to other people in the country. I imagine it happens quite frequently, but if you talk to somebody who's politically correct, then it's okay. You know, if you talk to the people in Saudi Arabia and talk about, yeah, we're with you, and we're going to keep the money flowing and all the weapons flowing, it wouldn't be touched. So it doesn't have anything to do with that. It's with whom they talk. And I think the big deal here was to undermine the position that Trump has, which the neocons consider too soft, too friendly. I mean, we have to have, you know, a willingness to build a military. We have to help NATO on the borders of Russia and Ukraine and all these areas. So I think that's the big issue, and it looks like those of us who would like to have seen a better relationship with China have really lost there.
Yeah, with Russia, yeah. And, you know, there were, I think I read there were two instances where the transition team met with people on Netanyahu's staff to discuss U.S.-Israeli relations. That's not blowing up. So you're right. I think it is about Russia. The neocons and the Democrats can't stand any kind of change. And that's why, you know, the whole Hillary Clinton campaign after she lost was, well, the Russians did it. And that's, you know, Obama planted what I would consider the equivalent of an IED inside the incoming Trump administration by, without any evidence whatsoever, you know, the twice they tried to present evidence and they completely failed, evidence of Russian hacking the elections, he still placed sanctions on them. And that really was an IED. And I would consider the call from Michael Flynn to the Russian ambassador trying to defuse that IED so it didn't explode in the early days of the presidency.
Yeah, right. And, you know, Flynn is out, but already there's lots of discussion. Who's going to be moved in here? They can continue this appointment process. And, of course, one of the names that popped up the earliest was General Joseph Kellogg, and he had been the chief of staff for Flynn. Mm-hmm. So, and their positions are probably very similar. So that'll be interesting if he would be nominated. You know how hard they would come down on him. I don't imagine he's the leader in this, but they always throw out several names, and he was one that they threw out rather early. But I can't imagine there'd be a whole lot of difference in his policies. I can't imagine that the opposition would change a whole lot. I mean, they would carry over and probably attack him just like they attacked Flynn.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. And I think some of the other names are also interesting. Name that we discussed earlier that's in the media is General Petraeus. His name is being floated yet again. Here's a guy who's disgraced by releasing super top secret above what Snowden released documents to a mistress, you know, and can got off with a slap of the wrist. And that's another one. I think you've heard of another one.
Yeah, but what about Petraeus? Wasn't he a very successful general? Everybody believes he's.
Yeah, he lost two wars. He lost Iraq and Afghanistan with his cockamamie surge tactics.
Well, unfortunately, that qualification, he might be appointed because they don't want to end these wars. That's true. Want to perpetuate the war. Yeah, well, Petraeus was the other one, but the one other one was a Harward, who was a admiral.
Yeah.
And had worked with Mattis. And some have suggested that he might have, you know, the lead on this and the best chance. But it didn't take a whole lot of effort to find out that he might even be involved in the deep state. He's the CEO of Lockheed Martin.
Oh, there you go.
what more could they have?
He'll keep us out of wars.
Yeah, so I imagine he'd be very supportive of, you know, $1 trillion military budget.
Yeah.
And there'll be somebody's, and you know, if the stance has weakened against Russia and they're strong against the Iranians, you know, I think that it looks like the neocons are in a much better position, and probably one of the head neocons now. I consider him very, very seductive in the manner because he's a personality-wise, he's a nice person. He knows he has a little bit of diplomatic skills, but he's also dangerous because he's very persuasive because he doesn't go off on tangent. And that, of course, is the Vice President Pence.
Yeah.
So, and I think he really is coming out very, very strong on this. And because, you know, even in the, I guess, the campaign in the debates, Pence had some disagreements.
Yeah.
You know, with Trump, and I thought that was pretty amazing. You know, if you're picking somebody, if a non-interventionist was president, wouldn't you pick a non-interventionist to be the vice president? But anyway, Pence, I think, is looking good politically speaking.
Winners and losers, put him in the winner category,
yeah,
for sure.
No doubt.
But, you know, yeah, there was twice that he contradicted Trump's stated foreign policy on Russia. Once during the debate, where he was even Trump was even asked afterward, as you say, well, your vice presidential candidate doesn't have that view that we should get along with Russia. Well, he has a different opinion, but you know that would suggest some of the things for the reasons why Flynn may have tried to reach out to the Russian ambassador without giving Pence a full readout of what happened, because Pence may be opposed to that move, and it may be a way of him to convey the president, who actually is the commander-in-chief, to convey his views to the Russians without having Pence run interference with the neocons. The other thing that struck me as interesting is, Michael Flynn, he was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Presumably, he understands the intelligence community and how it works. So he would have known the use of a telephone to have a call with the Russian ambassador would have a very high chance of being monitored. So that would make you wonder about his motives. Maybe he had innocent motives. If he would have expected to be monitored, if it was something to be hidden, maybe they would have found another way to try to communicate.
But it looks like there was something there that he felt compelled that he had to kill it and get out of there, that there was something that they wanted it to be stopped. And who knows how aggressive Trump would have been on this, but it does suggest something. And I always suspected these people who are friendly with Russia. Some of them are very sincere about it, but a lot of it's financial. I mean, a guy like Flynn may have big investments over there, which to me wouldn't be so bad. I mean, just put it out in the open. Yeah. That to me would say, yeah, he's not going to likely nuke them. You know, he's not like going to want to invade them. He's not going to be a Max Boot neocon that just looks for a chance to go in and fight with these people.
What's interesting, you mentioned Max Boot. You know, one of the things I think that this will happen, the winners and losers, another one of the winners would be this strange Democrat neocon alliance. And they're going to smell blood in the water with this Flynn resignation, no doubt, because it bolsters the crazy conspiracy that somehow the Russians, rigged our elections. But I picked out three tweets at random from leading Democrats, people associated with the left, and neocons. If we could put a couple of them up, we'll just read them in order. Here's Max Boot. With the Flynn scandal, we are seeing only the tip of Kremlingate. Needed bipartisan investigation to fool Trump-Putin ties. This is sort of, beyond 9/11 conspiracy theorists. This is heavy conspiracy. And here's another one. So Max Boot is a neocon. Here's Paul Begala. Long ties with the Clinton family. Keep your focus on the organ grinder, not the monkey. Trump is the organ grinder. His relationship with Russia is a story, not Flynn's. So keep the investigations going. And then here's the third one. We all know this guy, Michael Moore. He wasn't quiet about it. Let's be very clear, Flynn did not make that Russian call on his own. He was instructed to do so. He was told to reassure them. Arrest Trump. That's a great crime, trying to smooth over relations with Russia after the outgoing president throws a bomb into the whole situation. Well, that's a crime.
You know, maybe the infighting, I'm always looking for a good thing coming out of it. Maybe with all the infighting, they can't get together on which country is going to get attacked first. And they're always lining up, the military industrial there, but it's still sort of boggles my mind that the CEO of Lockheed Martin might be able to get this job. They have no shame.
Yeah.
But once again, it's worrisome because so much of the deep state is more out in the open now. And there are some squabbles with the deep state. It's not five people to get together and in the morning they write out what they influence. Everybody has a different interest to influence government, but they usually kept it a little quiet. But now they're a little bolder in coming out. I mean, Wall Street's very much involved in this administration. I think Goldman Sachs has maintained their position, and they're still very influential, maybe more so than ever before. It used to be you'd have one or two, and we say, oh, yeah, they're in Treasury and they're in the Fed and they have a lot of influence. But now, there's quite a few. So there's a lot of people who belonged in the deep state have come out, crawled out and part of the administration. And they're not there to defend our liberties. They're not there to even talk about our liberties. They're not there to have a strong national defense and to try to avoid antagonisms and trying to avoid building up anger by a whole element of people around the world that would justify, when are they going to stop droning us? Mm-hmm. When are they going to stop killing civilians in our country? When's that going to happen? That is off the table. That is not debated, unfortunately. And I just think that the bankruptcy is about the only thing that will stall them. And there is a big question now about the money. Where are they going to get all the money for all these weapons? At the same time, the infrastructure with this dam getting ready to burst in California, the governor out out there said, bring on the money. I love Trump. $1 trillion in infrastructure. I want my 12%. Where are they going to get $1 trillion for infrastructure? You know, but it just goes on and on. And this is all part of it. Those are the serious things that you'd think conservative Republicans would say, you know, that debt is a problem. Spending is a problem. But nobody talks about cutting spending. You know, no matter what they do with medicine, and nobody knows what they're going to do with medicine, you can be absolutely sure that the amount of money that the government is using to run a medical system will not go down. It will continue to rise, just as this military spending is going to continue to rise.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was in Washington, D.C. over the weekend, and I can assure you the building boom is going on.
Oh, boy.
It is continuing. So the idea that Republicans are going to come to town and shrink government, and it's going to, and people are going to be leaving, that's not the case, because it is building sky high there.
I wanted to bring up one more thing that happened just in the last couple of days. It's not directly related, but philosophically it's related, and that's where the CIA, agent, you know, the secretary or the
director,
yeah. Mike Pompeo. He's busy. He's overseas, and you'd think he's patching up problems and solving it and maybe moving the troops home. No. The CIA has a president. But he went to give an award to a country for being the most anti-terroristic, for their anti-terrorism program, and that is Saudi Arabia. And they're going to be applauded. And, of course, they've never violated anybody's civil liberties. And there we are praising them in the midst of all this. And I was, well, yeah, that's okay. They're our best allies. But what if, you know, if there was somebody had talked to Saudi Arabia, you know, during the transition? There are so many countries that I'm sure we talked to, but nobody pays any attention. I just didn't think this is amazing that they are so bold to present this special award.
Fighting terrorism. You know, we had an article up over the weekend on the Institute's website. The Saudis are spending tons of money trying to recruit veterans in D.C., speaking out against this bill that allows the 9/11 victims to sue Saudi Arabia. So they know that they're complicit in terrorism, and meanwhile they get this award.
Yeah. Well, anyway, interesting things going on, and as we talked about it, it's going to continue. There are people who are determined this is only the tip of the iceberg, and those people who love this controversy, and those who would like to make it a partisan thing, they're going to be busy. And even though the Democrats in the minority now, they have the media on their side, and they will continue to agitate. So I think you're going to hear about this controversy for a long time. But of course, that's been going on a long time. And to me, the controversy is all about non-intervention versus intervention. And since most people in Washington are interventionists, economically speaking, and in foreign policy, we can expect that these policies aren't going to change until we can't afford them anymore. But I think that we'll be back talking about this issue, probably not too distant future, in the too distant future. But I want to thank everybody today for tuning into the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.